clothes that come to me. And people gather around. They are all what they can bring. Now, this is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. And yes, there is music on Air America, and it's on Sunday nights. And you know what we do around here. If you've been here before, we invite people in to play the records that they want to play, either what they're listening to or what they think's important, what they think we ought to hear. And this week, our guest is Janice Ian. And
hey, Steve.
How are you?
I'm very well.
Last time I saw you, you know, or I actually got to talk to you, we were all in a circle in the Bluebird Cafe.
That's right.
In Nashville, Tennessee.
That's right. I'd forgotten that. And you weren't going to be able to stay for the second set, and then you could.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that was
a
good night.
I think my ride left. I'm not sure. I think they just
There's a good reason to keep playing.
No, that was during a period in my life when I couldn't get any kind of license. I had actually had a driver at the time because I couldn't get a driver's license.
So you should have gone to my partner. She
long,
does that.
Long, long, long story. Well, we might as well get started on some music. You've got actually, I think Nina Simone is fast becoming, surprisingly, one of the most played artists on this show.
Interesting, yeah. She's having a huge resurgence. It's fascinating
all
even
kinds
how
of
self-destructive
people.
She was.
Yeah. Vic Chestnut, I think, played, he actually played all Nina Simone when
really?
He was on the show. He was the one guy that,
yeah.
And it was really interesting because I think he concentrated on the songs that she wrote because I mean, she recorded all kinds of material.
Well, she was an incredible pianist and a great writer.
Right.
And completely psychotic, you know, what are you going to do?
And hung in there for so many years.
You she know, did indeed.
It was a long career and a lot of material. You brought in...
I Loves You Porgy from Porgy and
Bess. Porgy and Bess. So this is Nina Simone, you know, singing.
Well, this is what made her. This was her first record in the United States, and it was a hit here. If you can believe that a record like this could have been a hit.
Nina Simone on Air America Radio. Janice Ian is our guest this week, and she brought that in for us to listen to. You know, great singers, you know, singers that seem like, you know, two lines, and you know who they are, you know who you're listening
yeah,
to.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing that's fading fast, you know, in these days where everything sounds the same and everything is manufactured the same way, but the world that Nina was coming out of, or Odetta, or Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald, Billie Holiday, any of those ladies, was a world where... you needed your own voice. You needed your own signature sound or you couldn't make it.
Right, and there were also people had long careers, and you know, the ones that stayed with us long enough, you had you can hear the changes in their voice over a career, and they adapt to that. I mean, I know.
Yeah, you hear it as you get older. I mean, I'm 54 now, and I hear a real big change in my voice over the last 20 years, but I know that I'm a better singer than I was 20 years ago, too, so you're right.
I'm 51. My first record came out when I was, like, in my late 20s, and I was, you know, I'm a lot better singer than I was then.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not, then you should work at a gas station, I guess. Something else.
Absolutely. There's, you know, I think there's, you know, I've known a few singers that stayed around. You know, Delbert McClinton, I watched him because I grew up in Texas, and I watched him for years and years. And, you know, back in the days when he smoked two packs of Camels a day, and he takes a lot better care of himself than he used to. But it was that thing. He was the first guy I saw that I realized probably never went out with 100% of his voice in those days, but he always knew that, you know, his
always went out
his
100%
instrument
of his heart.
Yeah, and he knew his instrument. He knew how to sing around it.
Right.
We had a little rockabilly band in the early 80s, and we opened for Delbert a lot because there were only three of us, and we were cheap. And so we ended up traveling with him quite a bit. He's sort of like the closest thing to, you know, like Frank Sinatra that rock and roll ever produced. He's just sort of there, and he sounded different when he was younger, but he's still a great singer, and he's learning stuff about his voice all the time.
Yeah, I also wonder with somebody like Nina, who was so unfortunately ill, I wonder how far you can judge her and what that did to her singing. That here's a black woman in the 40s and 50s, and she's got this unbelievable talent. I mean, as pianists go, to me, there's very few who can touch her. As arrangers go, as writers go.
She was absolutely fearless, too.
And she was fearless, and she goes to a conservatory to study classical music. Now, what must that have been like for a black woman then? It's hard enough being a woman then, you know, let alone black. And then trying to juggle, I mean, I knew her reasonably well, and just trying to juggle between the street and the expectations of the black community in the 60s on her and her own desire to create what was inside her to break out of that.
She always seemed to be, you know, absolutely, even when she wasn't in control of what was going on in her life, she was always in control of her art.
Absolutely.
You hear it and you saw it. You know, I've heard live recordings, and I actually heard a studio recording that she turns around like 30 seconds in and stops the band and says, that's not it, that's not right, and gets them going the way she wants them going. And somebody was smart enough to keep that take.
She's a great arranger, but she was coming out of that Miles school, too.
Absolutely. Billie Holiday.
Same thing. I mean, you know, some people think Billie's later recordings in the late 50s before she died are useless because they're not pretty.
Right.
And to me, you know, pretty is what Barbie dolls are for. Pretty is what you paint on your face when you're a kid and you're trying to look like a grown-up. Pretty doesn't matter. Heart matters. And her last recordings, that last concert at Carnegie Hall, where there's no voice, but she sings better than anybody.
Yeah, this is Billie Holiday on Air America Radio.
above. Here am I, patiently waiting, hoping and longing. Oh, how I yearn. Where are you? Are you forgetting?
Great Billie Holiday on Air America Radio. This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now.
I'm watching the sea for the one I love must soon come back to me.
Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. Our guest this week is Janice Ann. And I don't know, I'm in New York now, and I'm living in the neighborhood that I always wanted to live in.
Living the life, huh? The positively 4th Street life.
Yeah, I'm kind of, you know, I'm living in you know, if you grew up, and, you know, my dad never would let me have an electric guitar, so I started gravitating towards, you know, toward, and hanging out, and also coffee houses. I couldn't play places that served liquor because
right.
I started so young.
Yeah,
so
I had to have dispensation.
Coffee houses made sense. I could walk into them and get a gig, so I started, you know, reading about, you know, the part of New York that I'm living in now on the back of album covers, mm-hmm. you know, from the time that I started playing. And now I'm literally living on the street that Bob Dylan's walking down on the cover of the Free
cool.
Wheel and Bob Dylan. You know, it's the only Dylan record that was out of print at one point. And I remember my very first trip to New York to play. Freewheeling, for some reason, was deleted from the Columbia catalog.
Really?
And this is before everything was reissued on CD, and then it was restored. It was for a while in the early 80s.
I wonder if that's when there was that whole flap where Dylan was thinking of leaving and they were just punishing him.
Maybe, or it may have been just he had so many records, it may have just been an oversight, you know.
Yeah,
bean counters make those decisions about
right.
what gets deleted from a catalog. Every time I go into a record store, I find a... you know, one of these, there'll never be a Steve Earle box set because they've repackaged everything that I recorded for MCA so many times that it's just like, it's sort of hopeless. I saw another one that I'd never seen the other day. But the Free Will and Bob Dylan is like always been one of my favorite records. And you know, I sort of got turned onto it a little late because of my age. And I had a drama teacher in high school that turned me onto it. And it was just sort of... It was a real revelation for me. It's a transitional record between Dylan being a folk singer and being us, you know, inventing our job.
A rock singer,
being
yeah.
a singer-songwriter.
Well, I think for me, you know, when I was starting to think about this new album and I was intent on making a folk album, I decided that what I was going to have to do was listen to the music that I grew up on.
Right.
And so I spent 6 months on tour with my computer playing music all night long while I was asleep and all day long while I was in the room. And went back through all the really early Dylan albums. And I don't know if I'd been too young to appreciate it or what, but when Corinna came on, I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the guitar part and the feel, and mostly I fell in love with the vocal. I mean, I think Dylan's a great singer. I think sometimes he gets
yeah.
real lazy, but he's a great singer at his best.
One of my favorite singers, yeah.
And amazing phrasing. And Corinna, to me, just... encapsulates everything that he was doing at that point.
This track is the one you chose. I think is really interesting too. Because Corinna, you know, is another one of those songs that some lots of versions of it had been around
Tons.
Before. But I think Dylan distilled it down to, you know, just the version I end up singing.
The essence.
I know a bunch of them, and it's in a record where he's still performing. Most of the tracks are just him and a guitar and
right.
harmonica. This is the beginning of him actually starting to work with some other musicians. And I guess Bruce Langhorne.
I think it was Bruce Langhorne.
And Bill Lee. Would
right, Bill Lee on bass.
Yeah. So this is Bob Dylan, Corinna on Air America Radio.
Corinna, Yeah, we've been so long. Carina, Carina, yeah, we've been so long. I've been worried about you, baby. Baby, please come home. I got a bird that whistles. I got a bird that sings. I got a bird that whistles. I got a bird that sings. But I ain't got courage. Life don't need things.
Carina, Carina, what a great track.
What a great singer.
Yeah, he's a great singer. And I don't know. This record is still one of my very, very...
It's a fabulous record.
Yeah, from beginning to end. This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. You're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. Our guest this week is Janice Ian, and we had Odetta here a couple of weeks ago, and it's always a little bit of an intimidating experience for me.
You think so with Odetta?
Well, I think she's a sweetheart, but she's also...
She'll smack you upside the head and knock you into the sun.
I met her on a Nancy... It was like Nancy Griffith was making a record. She was making the second mm-hmm. of those records of covers that she made, and... Odetta and Guy Clark and I can't remember who else. I think Siobhan Kennedy and me were singing harmonies on Deportee and mm-hmm. Nancy as well. And Odetta stopped the whole thing in its tracks and says, she said, people, this song needs to be sung. And she was very serious about it.
Yeah. Oh,
Guy,
yeah.
Guy wasn't singing. Guy wasn't doing
nothing. She's nobody's fool. Yeah. You know, she's the start of my career in a way, because I remember I was 9 years old and I was taking a shower and I heard this voice coming from the TV, and I ran out of the bathroom with a towel wrapped around me, yelling, "Who is that? Who is that?" And it was Odetta on the Harry Belafonte show.
Right.
And I had never seen, I grew up around lots of blacks and whites and all different colors, and I had never seen a woman with an afro.
Right.
And I had never seen a woman stand there and play guitar and take over a room.
Right.
And when Odetta would walk on stage, particularly in her prime, she sucked all the air out of the room. And I remember it also because I begged my mother to take me to see her, and it was the first concert that I ever went to. My mom scrambled third balcony seats somewhere, and I think she played in Rutgers or in Princeton. And we got to go see her and then waited for 2 hours to see if she'd come out and give me an autograph, and she didn't. Years later, when I met her, you know, I told her that story, and she just said, oh, honey. And she gave me this huge hug. And she's been the thread through my career. When I was doing Society's Child, she would sit at the gaslight next to my mom and say, Pearl, she's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. Uh-huh. Dad had taught me how to put on makeup, told me that managers work for me, not me for them. I mean, the woman is, this is a very overused phrase, but she's a national monument and a treasure.
Yeah, we were talking about the Dave Van Ronk book on the break, and he basically, you know, Odetta was the first person that he saw that that play actually, you know, come down and did a show in the Village in the very beginnings mm-hmm. of those clubs, you know, booking folk music, and took a tape of, you know, she liked Van Ronk, and, mm-hmm. and she took a tape of his to, she offered to take a tape of his to Albert Grossman at the Gate of Horn. She was playing a week later.
Uh-huh.
The tape never got to Odetta, and of course, you know, there's a long Shaggy Dog story about
Van Ronk could have died years and years earlier.
Yeah, Van Ronk hitchhikes to Chicago, and Albert Grossman's never heard of him, but it turned out it wasn't Detta's fault that the tape had never gotten to her in the first. His intermediary had failed him. But
just a kind, generous soul, and John Henry, to me, she was so brave to take all of those, what were then called slave songs, and popularize them and just basically say, look, this is what we came out of, and this is where blues comes from, and this is where a lot of your country comes from, this is where a lot of your rock and roll comes from, so learn from the beginning.
This is Odetta on Air America Radio. On Air America Radio, John Henry. We were talking a little bit while that was going on about Jack Elliott, and he is one. He took Odetta around to a lot of his friends, a lot of people that he knew. I think, you know, Woody Guthrie and you know, Will Gear found out about Odetta through Jack, but he was doing it because he was blown away.
Right.
And learned as much from her as she did from
him.
Well,
how can you hear a voice like that and not, even now, you
yeah.
know, and not go, what? Amazing, amazing woman.
Yeah, absolutely. This is you brought in. We've played this song here before. We haven't played this version actually, and it's a great one. This is a Woody Guthrie song. I've been singing this song lately. I just decided that.
I think the times are right for
absolutely,
it.
Especially
remind people that the country is the people.
Yeah, and not leave the cool verses out. Sometimes I'll sing it and I'll
the subversive verses.
I'll only sing the subversive verses.
Yeah.
Sometimes if I'm gonna leave any out, it'll be the verses. Everybody knows all of the other verses.
I think Woody would have loved the irony of "This Land Is Your Land." You know, it was written in response to "God Bless America,"
right?
And
which I have to sit through at every Yankees game.
Yeah,
now.
Sorry. And I think he would love the irony that hundreds of thousands of school children have grown up on this song, thinking that it's all about this land is perfect, this land is wonderful, there's not a better place, you know.
Right.
It sure is pretty wonderful, but boy, I tell you what, there need to be some changes.
Yeah, well, Pete Seeger, you know, a lot of that people, Pete Seeger, the gig that he had that he could go to was playing children's camps.
That's right.
And he did when he was blacklisted and couldn't get a gig in New York. This is Pete Seeger, "This Land Is Your Land."
Walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. This land is my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts, while all around me a voice was sounding. Dust clouds rolling, the fog was lifting, a voice was chanting, this land was made for you and me.
Sing it, Pete. This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. Our guest this week is Janice Ian, and you have a new record out.
I do indeed have a new record called, oddly enough, Folk is the New Black. It's right in here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you were consciously decided that you were going to make a folk record.
I did. You know, I've never thought much about making records before, as odd as that sounds. I've always just waited till I had enough songs that I liked and then picked out the band and gone in and done a record. And this record, by November of 2004, I knew that I was going to call it Focus the New Black. I knew that I wanted to strip everything down to essentials. I knew that I only wanted two musicians on it besides me. And I knew I wanted to cut it all live and make sure that they were all songs that I could sing on stage without anything but a guitar.
Right.
And it was also the first record that I ever wrote. I just sat down and wrote it over the period of 3.5 months, just song after song after song.
That's pretty quick.
It was pretty quick. We did all the vocals live, which was great. And it's also the first one that I've written everything on with no co-writes, I think since 83 or 81.
Oh, that's cool.
So it just all kind of fell together. And at the time, there was such nasty political stuff going on that parts of it took a political bent that I haven't hit since maybe 1974. You know, I kept sitting there thinking, I can't believe Congress and the Senate seem to have forgotten that this is a three-piece government, and everybody is thinking that it's just a one-piece and it's the president and they're somehow under him. I don't understand how that happened.
Right. Yeah, things have changed, and it's what, you know, people ask me, you know, if I'm, you know, asking me if I consider myself to be a political songwriter. You know, I am a songwriter that's living in really politically charged times, and I think I don't see how I would have written any record different than the last two records that I've written.
Yeah, I always see myself as I guess if you have to define it, more of a sociological songwriter, because what I do well is songs like At 17 or Society's Child. But for some reason last year irritated me enough that all this politics kept creeping in, and all of a sudden I was finding myself talking about politicians with minds like sewers and asking people to come and gather around, and if you still held freedom dear, to take a step across the water with me. And it surprised me. You know, I didn't expect to hear that coming out of my mouth. Yeah. But the more that I wrote those songs, and it's not to say the album is a political album like yours are, but it certainly has more politics on it than anything I've done in decades.
Well, I mean, the thing about defining a political record, I mean, the last two records, I have to admit, are pretty political, but I think Copperhead Road was a pretty political record at the time. It was about...
That's all in how you take it, then.
Yeah, well, it was my post-Vietnam record. Mm-hmm. It was like a lot of other stuff that was being made at the time. Pete Seeger said that all songs are political.
Absolutely.
Lullabies are political.
Absolutely.
To babies.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely true. Danger, Danger, this particular track that you're playing.
Yeah, well, the Patriot Act, you know.
Yeah.
Our local library was having a big discussion, and I live at the library. I really count on my library.
Right.
And they have saved my life more times than I can count. And I think we all forget that the library system was founded by Andrew Carnegie, you know, and here's this really wealthy robber baron deciding that everybody should have access to books.
Right.
That's what I was talking about. You know, if you had people like that with money now who gave to the community that way, I'd have a lot more respect for the powers that be. Danger, Danger was just, they were having a discussion about, should we ban To Kill a Mockingbird? Because there's a rape in it and there's ugliness in it. And I thought, do you really think your 13-year-olds don't know that exists?
Right. Especially in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
There are video games that are a lot more disturbing anything that I've ever run across in literature.
Yeah, and I think the whole concept of... And then that clashes with... My uncle's been with the ACLU for decades now, and my mom and he stopped talking for a year when he voted to let the Klan march through Boston.
Right.
And my mother said, I'm not talking to you anymore. And he said, that's their right.
It is their right.
It's these people's right to be stupid. It's their right to be bigoted.
You have to defend that. It's extremely important. This is Genesee and Danger, Danger on Air America Radio.
You got Ma Rainey talking about Jelly Roll. Chuck Berry working on the mojo. Bessie Smith singing Bulldagger Blues. Elvis twitching on the evening news. Danger, danger, can't you see?
do. Danger, danger, can't you see? They're in your local library. Spend those others, yes sirree. That's what America means to me. Gonna ban all the giggles, the wops and the kites. Gonna ban all the chinks and the towelhead tights. The American flag. Danger, danger, can't you see? It's dangerous when they are free. Stand those lazy refugees. That's what America means to me. I watched the news last night at 9. Saw a head blown off somebody's spine. Women moaned and the children screamed. Doesn't anybody else think that's obscene? It ought to be a felony to practice such stupidity. But it's my right, as you can see. That's what America means.
Seeing on Air America Radio, who has been our guest this week, and you can the new record is
available at www.janicean.com.
Cool.
Folk is the new black. Yes.
Yeah. This has been a gas.
Back at you.
Yeah. Well, this is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. Good night.